Offline is brought to you by Sundays. What if your dog's food was formulated not to prolong shelf life, but to maximize your dog's quality of life? Think about it. And while you do, let me tell you about Sundays. Sundays was founded by a veterinarian and mom, Dr. Tori Waxman, who got tired of seeing so-called premium dog food full of fillers and synthetics. So she designed Sundays, real food made in a human-grade kitchen using the same ingredients and care you'd use to cook for yourself and your family. Every bite of Sundays is clean and made from real meat, fruits, and veggies with no kibble. That means no weird ingredients you can't pronounce and no fillers. And the best part, you just scoop and serve. No freezer, no thong or prep, no mess. Just nutrient-rich, clean food that fuels their happiest, healthiest days so you get more of them to share together. Leo loves Sundays. We used to have a dog food that wasn't dry dog food. It's like one of those wet dog foods that kind of smells and you have to refrigerate it. It's a pain in the ass. Sundays is great because it's easy to store and Leo loves it, runs to the bowl every time we pour it in. So it's great. Make the switch to Sundays. Go right now to sundaysfordogs.com/offline50 and get 50% off your first order. Or you can use code offline50 at checkout. That's 50% off your first order at sundaysfordogs.com/offline50. sundaysfordogs.com/offline50 or use code offline50 at checkout. Hey, Crooked listeners. If you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
I did a wager for journalistic purposes on what Caroline Leavitt would say during a White House press briefing. And it was around immigration, deportations, right? Serious real life things. And I bought $85 worth of contracts on that. But I'm listening to that as if it was a sports event, right? I'm not thinking anymore that somebody's life is at stake or, you know, this is a big public policy question. It's absolutely gamified my thinking about those issues within minutes.
I'm Jon Favreau, and you just heard from this week's guest, journalist Nancy Scola, who writes about how technology shapes government, politics, and markets. More than a decade ago, Nancy wrote a piece for the Washington Post about a new online marketplace that would allow Americans to invest a small amount of money in the outcome of the upcoming midterm elections in 2014. The company was called Predictit, and it capped your bet at $850. Fast forward 12 years later, and people are spending around $5 billion per week on political predictions that go way, way beyond elections. Just one example. A few weeks ago, on the night of February 28th, $500 million was suddenly traded on Polymarket over when the United States would strike Iran. Six new accounts made about $1 million when the bombs dropped that day. One trader, named MAGA My Man, made $500,000 alone. Over on Kalshi, the other major political prediction market, more than $54 million had been traded on a bet over when the Ayatollah Khamenei would be ousted. The winners of that prediction got refunds instead of payouts, as Kalshi decided that maybe betting on someone losing their life isn't such a great idea. And then there was the most frightening example that's been generating quite a bit of attention this week. A Times of Israel reporter named Emmanuel Fabian received death threats from Polymarket traders because he accurately reported on an Iranian missile striking Israel, which cost traders who had bet it wouldn't happen on March 10th quite a bit of money. At first, Fabian got messages urging him to change his reporting to say that the damage was from interceptor fragments and not a missile. Then he was offered money to change his story. Then the death threats came, including one message that said, "After you make us lose $900,000, we'll invest no less than that to finish you." Not great. You'll be shocked to learn that the Trump administration has taken a hands-off approach to regulating these political prediction markets, as in, there's basically no regulation whatsoever. And just for good measure, Don Jr. is on the board of Polymarket and is also a strategic advisor for Kalshi. Meanwhile, any number of people in the Trump administration with inside information about everything from economic announcements to the timing of military strikes could be making a fortune right now, and we'd have no idea. All of this to say, it's time to start paying attention to political prediction markets and what happens when life or death decisions are gamified for profit. Nancy Scola has been covering this topic ever since her first piece back in 2014, so I wanted to talk to her about the rise of these markets, the arguments the proponents make for them, and the people in Washington who might be benefiting from it. But first, I also talked to our pal Senator Chris Murphy, who just this week introduced legislation with Congressman Greg Kassar to ban wagering on government actions, terrorism, war, assassination, and events where an individual knows or controls the outcome. It's called the Bets Off Act. I wanted to know what he hopes to achieve with the bill, its prospects for passing, and get his thoughts on a question that he himself recently asked. What happens to us spiritually when every moral question becomes a market? Here's our conversation. Senator, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're doing an episode on political prediction markets this week. And as we were preparing for it, I noticed that you just introduced a bill that would ban wagering on government actions, terrorism, war, assassination, and events where an individual knows or controls the outcome. Why this bill? Why now?
It seems like a pretty urgent matter because it's, you know, another way that the Trump administration is engaging in mind-bending nuclear-grade corruption. You know, what happened right prior to the Iran war, which you may have already covered, is really stunning. It looks like people right before the war began, a day before, made these bets, specific bets that had not been made up until that Friday, that war was going to begin within 24 hours. I think it's just obvious that those were people close to the president. And, you know, that's disgusting and gross in and of itself, but it speaks to this broader corruption that affects everybody in that there are now people inside this White House and maybe future White Houses that are making bets, secret private bets on whether the United States goes to war or not, and then trying to influence events inside the Situation Room, not to the benefit of U.S. national security, but so that they can make a bunch of money. And so it just feels like this is happening, maybe at scale, inside the White House right now, and we should shut it down as quickly as possible. So my legislation, you know, is not a comprehensive bill to regulate prediction markets, but it says you shouldn't be able to wager on government action. And frankly, you shouldn't probably be able to wager on anything in which there's one person who controls the decision, one person who knows the outcome. Those are all fundamentally corrupt and rigged, and we should be protecting the country and consumers from those kind of markets.
In general, what about these political prediction markets do you think makes them distinct from sports gambling in terms of how they should be regulated, even beyond sort of the narrower set of reforms that you're pushing in that bill?
Yeah. Again, if somebody inside a basketball game decides to, you know, miss a free throw intentionally to make money for a handful of people, that doesn't necessarily impact me. That sucks. But it does impact me if there's somebody inside the Situation Room who is pushing the president to drop bombs on a country, which ends up in my neighbors getting killed because of a bet that they made. But more broadly, John, I don't know if you're covering this in this episode, you know, I think there's a real spiritual impact to the country when, you know, decisions that are fundamentally moral decisions, like war or famine, become monetized. And I think in a world today where a lot of people are giving up on government, they don't feel like they can be powerful through traditional avenues, voting, volunteering, by betting on big questions like war, you have an illusion of having a stake in your government, having a connection to these big decisions, but you really don't. You're still a voyeur. And I think in a moment when we should be incentivizing people to repair what's wrong with our democracy, this allows for people to feel connected to their government while actually having no impact at all.
Yeah, the argument that you hear from the people who support political prediction markets is, well, it's more accurate than polls because if you put money behind it, if you have some skin in the game, it's more likely to be accurate information, which I never quite understood because I don't know why gambling is somehow more rational and thoughtful than just guessing. But also, if there is information that someone knows that's going to make the betting more accurate, then that seems like it's insider information. Like, what do you think about the argument from the prediction markets that, like, this is going to make politics more transparent and accurate?
But I mean, like, so what? Like, okay, like, maybe there's some merit to that argument that you have, you know, better predictive information about future events. But, like, is that what we're missing from our politics?
Right.
I mean, what we should be focusing on is the massive corruption that exists and not lighting it on fire through these prediction markets. But they also become circular because if there are individuals who are making bets, who are then pushing the action inside the decision-making rooms towards their bets, then it's giving you accurate information, but for what purpose? It's ultimately just a whole bunch of people self-dealing, and the information you're getting is just giving you information about the self-dealing. Why is that a net positive for the country?
Well, and you mentioned government officials, but it goes beyond that. I'm sure you probably heard the story this week about this journalist, Emmanuel Fabian, who he got death threats because he accurately reported on an Iranian missile striking Israel, which cost people who bet that it wouldn't happen. And then they wanted him to change his reporting to say that it was interceptor fragments so that they could win their bet. And when he didn't do that, there's death threats. And, you know, that just opens up, first of all, that's harassment, death threats, but then, like, do journalists change their reporting because of betting? And then there's opportunities for a journalist like that too, if they were, you know, had nefarious intents to sort of use insider information. So I wonder if these markets ultimately need to be regulated even more broadly.
Yeah, and that's why I just think that you need to sort of wipe out these markets. There are other approaches in which, you know, you try to target the corruption by saying people with inside information shouldn't be able to bet. But again, I can't figure out the net good of these markets. And so to me, it's just a lot simpler if you say, for purposes of betting on government action, or for any instance where there's one person that knows the outcome or controls the outcome, the downside is just infinitely worse than the upside. So just, like, get them off the internet, and you'll still have plenty of places to wager money. I mean, it's stunning how much more opportunity you have to wager if that's your thing today than 20 years ago. These prediction markets coming offline aren't going to affect your ability to engage in, you know, that pastime.
Last question. Do you see a sort of bipartisan path for this legislation, and how much pushback do you think it would get from the prediction markets themselves, like Polymarket, Kalshi?
So, broadly, I think that there is, you know, a realignment in this country available on a whole host of issues. And the commodification of everything is one of those things that just makes people feel super empty on both the right and the left. Everything in our economy has become commodified, and now even government action is becoming commodified. So I do think there's absolutely potential for this to be an issue where you find right-left alignment, but not until Donald Trump is gone, because Trump's family, as you've likely talked about, is deeply integrated into these markets. The sons are advisors, paid advisors to both the big betting prediction markets, and the family is clearly making tons of money, and clearly lots of people in the White House are placing bets and making money off the inside information. So long as Trump is there, this is just going to be a funnel for corruption. His employees, Republican senators and Republican congressmen, are not going to move on this because they aren't given specific instructions to move on it. And so we're probably, you know, stuck with this mess for the next few years. But that doesn't mean that we can't try to build some consensus in the grassroots on the right and the left to do something about it once he's gone.
Yeah, good proposal to add to a broader reform agenda for sure. Chris Murphy, thank you so much for joining, and thanks for introducing that legislation.
Thanks, man.
Take care. Up next, I'll put this all into context with journalist Nancy Scola. But first, just a reminder, if you haven't already, to consider becoming a subscriber to Crooked. Friends of the Prod subscribers get all kinds of great stuff. You get our new weekly episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends. You get access to subscriber-only shows like Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer, which is excellent. You get access to our growing list of excellent Substack newsletters, and you get ad-free episodes of all your favorite Crooked shows. Also, you get to feel pretty good about supporting one of the few independent pro-democracy media outlets that will never be owned by an Ellison. So, head over to crooked.com/friends and become a subscriber today. Offline is brought to you by bookshop.org. Local bookstores are the heart of our communities. Since 2020, bookshop.org has funneled over $40 million back into independent shops. They're a best for the world B Corp and the unapologetic anti-Amazon alternative built to ensure your favorite local bookstore stays open forever. Where you shop for books matters. When you purchase from bookshop.org, you're supporting more than 2,500 local independent bookstores across the country. Independent bookstores do more than sell books. They take care of and pour back into their communities, creating safe spaces that foster culture, curiosity, and love of reading. Whether you're searching for an incisive history that helps you make sense of this moment, a novel that sweeps you away, or the perfect gift for a loved one, bookshop.org has you covered. Now you can support local independent bookstores even when you read digitally with bookshop.org's ebook app. You can browse and purchase on bookshop.org and read right in your device's web browser. Or for the full reading experience, download the app for iPhone or Android. Every purchase financially supports local independent bookstores. I have a local independent bookstore, Chevalier's, and I love it because it is a community space. You go there, you get some books. There's like a kids section. The kids can go and read. They play. Everyone hangs out there on the weekends. It's great. We should have more independent bookstores.
Yeah. I just finished reading In the Garden of Beasts by Eric Larson on my Eric Larson kick, which I got at a local bookshop in Los Feliz. And awesome book. Incredible story about the ambassador to Germany in 1930s Germany. Fascinating.
Cool.
Fascinating.
Sounds fascinating. Use code OFFLINE10 to get 10% off your next order at bookshop.org. That's code OFFLINE10 at bookshop.org. Offline is brought to you by 3-Day Blinds. At this point, we can shop for groceries, furniture, and even cars from home. So why is blind shopping still stuck in the Stone Age? I think they were blind shopping in the Stone Age. That's why you need to check out 3-Day Blinds. There's a better way to buy blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery, and it's called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of high-quality custom window treatments in the U.S. And right now, if you use my URL, 3dayblinds.com/offline, they're running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. 3-Day Blinds has local, professionally trained design consultants who have an average of 10-plus years of experience that provide expert guidance on the right blinds for you and the comfort of your home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no-obligation quote the same day. Not very handy. The expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I've loved 3-Day Blinds since long before they were ever a sponsor. I first used them when I first moved to LA more than 10 years ago now, and they come to your place, they look around, they do all the measurements, they help you order the right blinds, then they install them. What more could you want? It's great. Right now, get quality window treatments that fit your budget with 3-Day Blinds. Head to 3dayblinds.com/offline for their buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/offline. One last time, that's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to the number 3daybinds.com/offline. Nancy, welcome to Offline.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So you've been on the political prediction market beat for quite a while now. Here's the lead of a Washington Post story you wrote on the topic. Just in time for Tuesday's midterm elections in the United States comes an online marketplace that allows U.S. residents to legally invest in the outcome of U.S. elections, and if all goes well, predict with precision who is likely to win races up and down the ballot. The date on that piece is November 4th, 2014.
I need to get a new beat, huh?
How did you first become interested in this topic all those years ago?
In 2014, there was this discussion around political polling. Political polling wasn't working very well anymore. in part because so many Americans were using cell phones as their primary phones, and pollsters hadn't really figured out how to reach folks who weren't answering their landline, you know, after dinner. And so prediction markets came up as this idea of a way of filling that information gap. I thought it was intriguing, so I started digging in.
For people who haven't used Kalshi or Polymarket, or for people who've never even heard of them, what is a prediction market, and how is it different from just betting?
Okay. So prediction market is an online platform where you can go and buy a contract. They're called event contracts because it's on the likelihood that an event is going to happen or not happen. So it's generally a dollar contract. You buy that dollar contract at a discount is the idea. Mm-hmm. And then because you're betting that that event is going to actually happen. When that event happens, you cash out if the event, you know, sort of cashed out in your favor or resolved in your favor, or you can sell it before then, right? You don't have to wait. You're not betting on necessarily on the outcome of the event. You can sell the contract before the event happens. So the argument is that's one way in which it's not simply betting because you can trade back and forth before the event actually occurs. Mm. Also, the argument that it's not betting is that you're not betting against the house. You're actually, you know, transacting with another person on the site who's willing to take the other side of that contract.
So what are some examples of predictions you can make on these sites that that people would be surprised by?
It's interesting. I mean, the Kalshi is the big, you know, it's a big $22 billion business, which is amazing to me because it wasn't that long ago. This was a Y Combinator project funded by about $20,000. But originally on Kalshi, it was you could bet on the outcome of Game of Thrones, like how the season finale was going to end up on Game of Thrones. You can bet on elections. You can bet on if the Federal Reserve is going to raise the interest rate or not, that sort of thing. And, you know, as I suspect we'll get to, there are some markets where you can actually bet on things like wars, the outcome of wars.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we'll get to that. I mean, you mentioned briefly Kalshi. Maybe you can walk us through just briefly a history of the two major platforms. Kalshi is the newer and smaller one, U.S.-based and regulated, requires an ID. Polymarket isn't U.S.-based, relies on crypto more. Don Jr. is involved with both of them.
Yes.
How did these companies go from sort of the largely academic curiosity that you were writing about a decade ago to what they are today?
Yeah, that's the idea. Is they were academic projects in the beginning. Some of them still technically are. Kalshi started, as I mentioned, as a Y Combinator project. There was two pretty much like finance geeks who thought it would be neat to apply event contracts to things beyond traditionally what event contracts were applied too, which was a lot of like agricultural futures, that sort of thing. Mm. And so they started that project. It took off at Y Combinator. They got a bunch of, you know, high profile investors, Sam Altman, that sort of thing. And they went from there. Polymarket was, as you mentioned, not US based. It was actually banned in the United States in 2022 for operating without what regulators thought was the appropriate license. They since been welcomed back into the United States after President Trump took over. The Trump administration is very, very, very favorable towards these markets. As you mentioned, Donald Trump Jr. is deeply involved with the two biggest platforms, which doesn't often happen that you have somebody
competitors,
direct competitors. Yeah. So it's strange times, but that's how they've gotten pretty big pretty quickly. As I mentioned, Kalshi, it went from almost nothing not that long ago to now this giant multi-billion-dollar company.
And how big has this become? What is the overall market like right now?
It's a very good question. I don't know the answer to it. We're still in the very early days of it. You couldn't bet on elections on Kalshi until very, very recently. So we're in the very early days. It's a great question. I don't have a total size of the market. I mean, the founders of Kalshi, when I've spoken with them, they said the reason they got into it is because they thought this was, you know, we're talking trillions potentially. Like, you know, the name Kalshi is Lebanese Arabic Kalshi for everything. And the idea is let's bet on everything. So there's almost no limit to what could be traded as an event contract. So it seems pretty big. And they've attracted a lot of investors who think that, you know, kind of agree with that premise.
So I'll be honest, my initial reaction to the rise of political prediction markets has been quite negative, based largely on, I think, the potential for abuse, longer-term consequences of gamifying politics even more than it already is. But you've interviewed and profiled a lot of people who feel differently, some of whom I've worked with in past lives. What is the sincere intellectual case that these markets are a net positive beyond just the money that people make?
Yeah, the argument is that they're information surfacing tools, that there's a lot of knowledge that's out there in the world that lots of individual people hold. If they can enter into a market, put a little bit of skin in the game by putting money behind their predictions, we're going to surface the best possible forecast of what's actually going to happen in the world. One of the reasons I'm intrigued by these markets is because I'd actually love to hear your perspective on decision-making in Washington. You could argue, and I've been here a long time, sometimes I think it's amazing that there's a few people get into a room and make a decision about, you know, what policy we should pursue and that sort of thing. So the idea would be, could we have more brains working on these problems? And there's, you know, there's some academic literature that says, yeah, like when you have more people thinking about problems, we actually have a better sense of how they're actually going to turn out.
I mean, the argument that people's predictions are more accurate because they put money behind them. I was sort of wondering about that because, like, what evidence is there that people who gamble are more rational and thoughtful than people who just guess?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's, you know, you mentioned I've written profiles of some of the folks that are involved in this field. And so I've gone to the meetups, the prediction market meetups here in DC. And the original sort of user base was people really into numbers, people who were willing to spend a lot of time researching what might be happening in the world, thinking about probability, right? So not just this thing's going to happen, but this thing's going to happen, and that's going to trigger the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And they actually sit down and work out these predictions and then put a little bit of money to see, you know, whether they're right or not. The idea is, as these platforms become, you know, just used by the masses, is that going to be minimized? Is that the sort of useful effect of surfacing good information going to be minimized? If it's just people, hey, I, you know, put $10 in to see if you can bet on what the, you know, White House press secretary is going to say in a press briefing. I've done that just to try out the platforms. It's kind of fun, right? Like, you win $5 if Caroline Leavitt says something. So as it gets more and more popular, you're going to see people just kind of wagering just, you know, just as a goof.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a former speechwriter. And so, and I know you can like bet on what the president or other politicians may say in speeches. I'm sure I could make a lot of money doing that for myself. I'm trying to think of like the value beyond that. And one thing that would make people's predictions more accurate is if you have people in the betting markets who have insider information.
Yeah.
So do the prediction market supporters and the people who do these platforms actually want to prevent this kind of market manipulation? Or do they feel like insiders who bet based on what they know is exactly what makes the markets more accurate?
Both. Very much there's a divide in the community. There are people who say, we want the best possible information. If the goal is really to surface the best possible information, insiders are going to know more than anyone else what's going to happen. So let's cultivate them. Let's actively get people on the platform thinking through these problems and putting money behind them. And then there are people who say, absolutely not, that corrupts the platforms. And Kalshi, we've talked about, it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, in part because they've been so willing to work with regulators. In the past, some of these Poly markets, some of these other platforms have sort of been, you know, skirting the law a little bit. And Kalshi, the reason they got so much VC money was because they were willing to kind of go through the regulatory process.
It's funny, because you asked me about sort of like decision makers in a room, and I guess it depends on what the bet or the prediction involves, because like, if it's a prediction about who's going to win an election, I think that, you know, obviously polling has all its drawbacks, but I feel like the people who do the prediction markets are looking at the polling. There obviously, there's a lot of other information, but trying to guess accurately what a voter's going to do seems like a really tricky thing, and I don't know that putting money behind it necessarily helps the person betting figure out more accurately what other voters that they've never met and don't know are going to do without, you know, looking through what campaigns do, which is like not just extensive quantitative polling, but like qualitative polling, talking to voters, knocking on doors, organizing that way.
Yeah. And in a way, betting on elections is one of the more controversial uses. I think it's almost one of the least interesting uses, right? We already have, you know, polling. We have a lot of people pontificating what's going to happen, and we have a clear result, you know, that we're all paying attention to. I don't think it's necessarily the sort of best and highest use of the platforms.
What are some of the people you talk to, like, what are they who either, you know, organize around betting markets or prediction markets or work for them? What kind of, what examples of sort of government decisions are they thinking that prediction markets would help make more accurate or would surface more accurate information around?
You know, I mentioned the Federal Reserve. There's a lot always betting around whether or not the Federal Reserve is going to, you know, raise interest rates or not. There's whether strategic oil reserve, like how the government's going to handle. There's an oil crisis, how the government's going to respond. So those are some of like the policy questions that people think these prediction markets are good at. Mm-hmm. And a big part of the appeal for people who are big fans of these markets is that you can use them to hedge, right? So if you're business depends on oil, and you think it's going to be damaging to your business, whatever happens with, you know, sort of oil prices, that sort of thing, you can bet against it, right? That's traditionally how some, you know, financial hedging tools work. So people do see those those policy events are so impactful on people's lives and people's businesses. So you can kind of bet on the other side to make sure you're covered.
Offline is brought to you by Quince. A thoughtfully built wardrobe comes down to pieces that mix well and last. That's where Quince shines. Premium fabrics, considered design, and everyday essentials that feel effortless to wear and dependable, even as the seasons change. Quince has the everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. Lightweight cashmere sweaters, short sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees and 100% Pima cotton, and European jersey linen. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work season to season. Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen. You're not paying for brand markup or fancy retail stores, just quality clothing. Their clothing is rated between 4.5 and 5 stars by thousands of people wearing it every day, and they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. You know what? I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to give it the 5 stars. None of this 4.5 to 5.
It deserves it.
Everything I've gotten from there, I love.
Love Quince.
The light cashmere sweater.
Go check out Quince.
I've loved the polos. I have loved the shorts.
They have so many. They have rugs. They have sheets. It's a good go. Check Quince before you buy it somewhere else.
Just go on the website. Check it out. Come on. Right now, go to quince.com/offline for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/offline for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/offline. Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out. So our conversation is timely because this is all happening right now with the war in Iran. Mm-hmm. Night of February 28th, $500 million was traded on Polymarket over when the U.S. would strike Iran. I think a half a dozen accounts made about $1 million. Mm-hmm. Kalshi ended up issuing refunds over bets that the Ayatollah would be ousted. And then maybe the most frightening example, the journalist Emmanuel Fabian got death threats because he accurately reported on an Iranian missile striking Israel. Which cost the people who bet that it wouldn't happen. And those people wanted him to then change his reporting to say that it was interceptor fragments.
Yeah.
Polymarket condemned this when Fabian made the story public. But how do they think about preventing this kind of thing from happening?
Yeah, it was interesting. In the reporter case, you mentioned that some of the bettors offered him a cut of the money if he,
yes.
if he rescinded his reporting, which is a new way for journalists to make money, maybe. I mentioned Kalshi, part of their, being regulatory friendly, is saying insider trading is absolutely prohibited on the platform. It's a tough question. I mean, they do sort of like the know your customer oversight that a lot of financial companies do. But, how do you actually say, what counts as insider information in a war, right? There's all sorts of people involved. If you're a soldier, does that count as inside information? So it's really hard to draw the line on some of these bets where the playing field is so wide, right? We're not talking about just sports betting where you kind of know who's a coach, who's a player, that sort of thing. It's the whole universe of possible contracts. So it's really hard to police. But, Kalshi, that's part of their bet is that they can do it. So,
well, and you mentioned journalism. I wonder how you think about it as a reporter, because reporters have inside information all the time that you go out and find yourself and acquire and report through sources. But that makes reporting both an opportunity to manipulate and abuse the system, but also it puts you out there as like, there's an argument that maybe it makes reporting more accurate. I don't know how you think about that.
I hate the phrase slippery slope, but it's like a slippery slope. If I think I get a new piece of information, the White House today announced a new AI policy. If I know about that ahead of time, right before I hit file on my content management system, do I place a bet on, when that's going to come out? It just seems entirely problematic. So it's one more fun thing journalists can't really participate in.
Polymarket CEO was asked about the war betting controversy. He dismissed the criticism as more money, more problems, calling the markets innovative and disruptive to CNBC. Meanwhile, Polymarket has said that during wartime, their markets provide accurate, unbiased forecasts as a public service to people in the conflict zone. You think there's merit to that? You think it's self-serving? A little bit of both?
I spoke with somebody who runs an organization called the Coalition for Political Forecasting, and it's a guy named Pratik Choglai. And he got into these markets because at the time he was sort of working in and around the State Department. And it was during the Iraq War, shortly after the start of the Iraq War. And he said, the predictions around the Iraq War were so bad. And I'm old enough to remember the predictions around the Iraq War were so bad that if you had these markets sort of as a little bit of a check hanging over policymakers to say, you know, when you say Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and then markets are say absolutely not, that makes no sense that they would have weapons of mass destruction, is potentially a useful sort of, you know, other source of information.
The CFTC is the government agency charged with oversight over prediction markets. The Trump-appointed chair is very supportive of giving Polymarket and Kalshi free rein to sort of do what they want. Can you talk a little bit about the regulatory history in the current status around these? Because I think, as you mentioned before, Polymarket had been banned briefly, but obviously this like sort of kicked up a lot in the Biden administration and now in the Trump administration.
Yeah, Washington has not been super favorable to these markets traditionally. We mentioned they started as academic projects. There was a little bit of like, look the other way. You know, the regulatory approach was called no action letters. You sort of would say to some of these markets, okay, we're not gonna regulate you, but stay small, keep your bets under a few hundred dollars, that sort of thing. When they started realizing that people might want to put more and more money on these markets, they ran into regulators, particularly during the Biden administration. Biden administration was just not, they just, you know, for various reasons I'm happy to discuss, they just were not that open to the possibility of these markets actually being regulated and mainstreamed. A big one is that, you know, the sort of around war problem, it feels icky to have people betting on circumstances in which people might die, right? It feels icky to bet on elections when somebody could be a staffer or a member of Congress themselves or some other way have the ability to influence the outcome of election and they can bet on it. Other argument is the CFTC is, you know, it's an agricultural regulator. It was created to, you know, regulate agricultural futures. It's, you know, one of the interesting things to me is the oversight committee in Congress is the Ag Committee for the CFTC. So it's not really set up to kind of police these products. And so their argument was, we just don't in some ways have the staff or the expertise to, if this is going to be a multi-billion, potentially $1 trillion market, you know, someday, that they just don't have that expertise to conduct proper oversight. There's, you know, again, sometimes decisions are made by very few people. There's a few handful of staffers in the CFTC who just, you know, thought these didn't really add much to the world. Companies like Kalshi would say it's not about adding so much to the world. If there's nothing, you know, particularly wrong with them, you should allow us to run these markets. And that was a point of conflict between the tech community and the Biden administration. The bigger conflict between the tech community and the Biden administration, this was one part of it, to say, We're developing these new products. They're potentially interesting and exciting. Can we at least try them out? And the administration saying kind of no. And that kind of turned a lot of people off, right, in the tech world to that administration. Fairly or not, it did.
And now they kind of have free rein under the Trump administration, though I saw that Arizona just filed 20 criminal misdemeanor counts against Kalshi. I think it's the first ever criminal charges against a prediction market for accepting bets on elections and sporting events without a state license. Kalshi says it's a financial marketplace, not a gambling operation. Is that distinction real? What do you make of Arizona's case?
When people realize you could bet on sports on these markets in states where you can't otherwise bet on sports, that drew a lot of people in the debate, including people that, you know, profit from the regulation of sports gambling in states. One of the big voices on this is Chris Christie, who's a gambling industry regulator, who said, let's not pretend this is anything more than just sports betting. And that ultimately will probably be what drives us to the people who are expecting this to go to the Supreme Court in the not too distant future, is the idea of, is this a federal regulator question? Do they have jurisdiction, or do states have jurisdiction, which they have had over sports betting? The CFTC, Mike Selig's the new chairman, who's very, very pro prediction market, is saying this is my, you know, he put out an op-ed in a video saying this is my deal. I'm the regulator of record on these issues. So that, you know, that is proving to be a big fight, in part because there's so much money involved.
I talked to Senator Chris Murphy for this episode, who just introduced the Bets Off Act this week, which would ban wagers on government actions, terrorism, war, assassination, and events where one person controls or knows the outcome. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Polymarket and Kalshi would fight that kind of regulation? Like, how do they feel about regulation in general, even sort of more minor regulation?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know yet, to be honest with you. And I think different companies will behave differently. Kalshi wants the approval of regulators. They want to be the prediction market that partners up with big companies, big news networks, that sort of thing. And they're kind of a safe product. Polymarket has proven a little bit more willing to be a little more risky in some of the practices they allow. So it's going to be an interesting debate, right? As we actually see pieces of legislation, what the industry is willing to back and what they'll throw themselves into fighting against with deep pockets, right? There's a lot of resources that could go into fighting this regulation. So yeah. Probably the next round of we're right still in the middle of the AI battle over regulating
AI. I was gonna say.
And we're going to get another one. We're probably going to get a big fight over prediction market regulation.
Yeah, I'm sort of fascinated with all the partnerships that they're developing with media outlets. I think mm-hmm. CNBC signed a deal with Kalshi to integrate its probabilities into TV and digital programming. Dow Jones signed a deal with Polymarket to bring prediction data into the Wall Street Journal. And now, contract prices are going to sit alongside earnings and election coverage as a piece of like reporting infrastructure. What do you think that means for the industry, and like, what does it mean when a bet becomes a data point that sort of shapes what people think is true?
One of the points of controversy in the history of these markets was there's a platform called InTrade back in around 2012.
Oh yeah,
and there was a big bet placed on the idea that Mitt Romney was absolutely positively going to be the next president of the United States, and there was a sense that somebody was placing that bet to get people thinking Mitt Romney was going to be.
Yeah.
So we'll have to learn how to interpret these numbers, right? Because they're probabilities. It's not 50%, this thing's going to happen, 50% this thing's not going to happen. So how we're not super good at like understanding probabilities as reporters, as Americans, arguably. So we're going to have to learn how to interpret that data.
I can't remember if you wrote about this or I read this somewhere else, but I had forgotten that Bill Ackman during the New York mayoral race encouraged Eric Adams to drop out of the race and then place a huge bet on Andrew Cuomo to try to boost Andrew Cuomo's chances, almost like an endorsement, but by putting a huge bet in the markets so that it would like up his chances, which seems illegal. I don't know.
Yeah. And then as a reporter, right, you're on deadline and you have to sort of file on the race. And what do you do with that information, right?
Right.
It's a signal, but we're not great at interpreting what that signal is yet.
you've covered this, how technology, reshapes political power for a long time. If you look at the trajectory, social media, algorithmic feeds, now prediction markets, is there a through line about what happens when you sort of financialize and gamify civic life?
Only good things occur. that is the concern, right? Is what our elections really need?
That was sort of Murphy's point. He's like, there's something deeper than just the, potentials for corruption and abuse, which is like what happens to us spiritually. Yeah. When every moral question becomes a market, like, is that what we need in politics right now?
Yeah. I mentioned this, betting that I did a wager for journalistic purposes on what Caroline Leavitt would say during a White House press briefing. And it was around immigration, deportations, right? Serious real life things. And I bought $85 worth of contracts on that. But I'm listening to that as if it was a sports event. Right. I'm not thinking anymore that somebody's life is at stake or, this is a big public policy question. It's absolutely gamified my thinking about those issues within minutes, at least this bet. So,
yeah.
But advocates will say they do this. You can bet on elections in the UK. And that's a, somewhat functioning democracy. So maybe we shouldn't be all that concerned, given everything else that's maybe wrong with elections, that this isn't what's going to drag us down.
One of my producers raised a question about the rise of markets as a result of young people's sort of perceived economic immobility. Have you found in talking to folks that like the user base or the people who are drawn to these markets is part of it as a result of this belief that since, long-term financial stability seems like it's slipping away, why not just keep playing the lottery and hope you hit it big?
Yeah, and I think, and also if your friends are doing it, right? If your friends are making money off of betting on sports, betting on elections, you kind of feel like you're missing out if you don't participate. Yeah, I think there's very much, there's a lot of the culture around prediction markets is a lot of young men on the internet doing what young men on the internet do. That's right. Very much part of this, yeah.
Nancy Scola, thank you so much for making us smarter on prediction markets.
Thank you, John. My pleasure.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, if you have comments, questions, or guest ideas, email us at offline@crooked.com. And if you're as opinionated as we are, please rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform. For ad-free episodes of Offline and Pod Save America, exclusive content, and more, go to crooked.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. If you like watching your podcast, subscribe to the Offline with Jon Favreau YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, TikTok, and the other ones for original content, community events, and more. Offline is a Crooked Media production. It's written and hosted by me, Jon Favreau. It's produced by Emma Illich Frank. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Jarek Centeno is our sound editor and engineer. Audio support from Kyle Seglin. Jordan Katz and Kenny Siegel take care of our music. Thanks to Delon Villanueva and our digital team who film and share our episodes as videos every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East. Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.